Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Final hour, John Dickinson and Ryan Covey, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Wes Goldberg will join us at 11:30. Let's get to Chuck. Chuck in Sacramento joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Doing well.
Awesome.
Good, good. Hey, I was thinking, you know, there's all this talk about the Warriors maybe doing some star chasing and stuff this offseason, and that's probably not that realistic that Giannis or someone like Ben Simmons or Embiid would be available. But they got this traded player exception, and then, of course, they'll have a high draft pick. But I was just thinking, a high draft pick isn't necessarily going to translate to someone who's going to be effective, especially, you know, you have an eight-man rotation in the playoffs, you're facing the Lakers or the Clippers or someone like that. It's like, can't necessarily rely on a high draft pick. So what's the likelihood that they could combine, you know, let's say a top three pick and that traded player exception and get a good, really good rotation player next year? Maybe they swap picks with a team like Phoenix and get Kelly Oubre or some guy like Miles Turner or something like that from Indiana, guys that are making $17.5 million or less, you know, where they can do a swap like that. How realistic is that? Do you guys have like names that would fit that kind of description? Is that even something they could do, where you combine a high draft pick like that and the traded player exception? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I don't think you can.
Yeah, well, you can't combine them in terms of adding a value in terms of a monetary value, but you can swap picks as just part of a trade.
Sure.
To enhance the value there, but you can't combine trade exceptions with other players, trade exceptions with other trade exceptions. It's basically it's a one-shot deal.
So you could use your first-round pick in the deal that you use the trade exception and acquire a player in return.
Yeah. If that makes that team more willing to trade that player.
Right.
You know what I mean? The fact that maybe they're bumping their pick up.
It's a reasonable question to ask, though, because then
you'd be essentially trading down and taking a player off of another team's hands for the ability for that team to move up.
Right. And unfortunately, this isn't a great draft for teams to be moving up, but you never know. And there could be a particular player a team would be coveting. And if you obviously, you know, I'm going to break some news for everybody right now. Winning the lottery would be great for the Warriors to have that number one overall pick, because then you control the fate at the top of the draft. You know, we were talking about this earlier this week when I was filling in for Damon. Kolsky seems to think, based on the other teams that will be drafting high in the draft, James Wiseman could be available pick three, pick four. You know, he cited these teams like, you know, the Cavs and the Knicks, they probably don't need a big, so need a man in the middle. And so if that's the case, you know, even if you do pick third or fourth, what's the worst? The worst picks fifth, right?
If they're the worst team in the league, the worst they could be is fifth.
Right.
If they're the second worst, it could be sixth.
Okay.
But yeah.
Sure, right in that range.
They'd have
anyway
to be four teams actually get their number drawn ahead of them.
Right, exactly. So Kolsky seems to think potentially there could be a bevy of teams that wouldn't be in on Wiseman anyway. So that'd be interesting.
I think that's possible. And maybe you feel more comfortable if you're picking them at three or four.
Less pressure at that point.
Know, I don't know. Yeah. But also, you know, as the draft process plays out and he gets evaluated, If he shows himself to be a really talented big man with a lot of upside, I think teams are going to wind up picking him anyway.
Yeah.
But again, it also gets back to the bigger question, which is the value of a big man. I'm of the belief that a center could actually have the most impact on the Warriors as a rookie.
No question.
Because there's a little bit of depth there. Like let's say you plug Wiseman in, and we will get to the caller's point on some of the names and stuff. We got that list of guys that are making around that $17 million range for the trade exception or less. But as far as Wiseman goes, if you said, all right, Wiseman pencils in with Draymond and Wiggins and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, that's great. And then you've still got Kevon Looney and Marquese Chris.
Right.
And then maybe at that point, because you have Wiseman, you add one more veteran that just has a big body. I know Alex Len is like
sure,
a name
yeah.
that just pops into my mind. He just went from Atlanta to Sacramento, I think, and isn't going to be playing very much for them. But he's just a body.
Right.
Right.
A large man.
So, and if he's your fourth string center, now look, I know the Warriors probably don't want to have 6-7 centers on the roster like they did during their championship run.
Yeah, like
but
last year,
could,
yeah.
You could carry four, although maybe Smiley Geach becomes the fourth one in this scenario. But to me, Wiseman, a big, and Wiseman more specifically, could have the most impact the fastest among players that you draft.
I could see that for sure. And let's face it, like in the perfect scenario, you hope Wiseman would be a fit and he would be available because that's precisely what the Golden State Warriors need.
Yeah.
They've got the best backcourt in the NBA. They've got Draymond Green. They've got Andrew Wiggins. Like, you know, you don't need to be Red Auer back to figure that one out.
Well, and on the Warriors specifically, too,
right.
is what I'm
yeah,
saying. When
yeah.
I say, which I know you get
yeah.
where I'm coming from, but I
yeah.
want to clarify that. Like, for the Warriors specifically, I think he's the guy that comes in and it's like, okay, if you do... say he's our starter or he earns that spot, he would be starting with three future Hall of Famers.
That'll help.
Potentially.
Yeah.
You know, depending upon what your opinion is of Draymond Green.
Two and a half.
At least two. So that would benefit. And then you have the depth there in Looney and Marquese Chris. As far as the trade exception goes, I'll just start, and it is a $17.2 million trade exception. So I'm going to start here on the list of salaries for next year. And I know a couple of people wrote about this. I think even our buddy Wes Goldberg wrote about this within the last week, and there were some names that he mentioned. Domantas Sabonis is literally the first player, if you just go down the line of salaries, he is literally the first player for next season that fits under the makes $17.2 million or less.
Right.
Okay? He makes $17.187 next year. I don't see, and he signed for four more years after this one. He has an extension that just begins next year and kicks in next year plus 3 years. So he would be under contract through, what would that make him? He would be under contract through the 2023-24 season.
Right.
Is he somebody that Indiana's going to want off of? I wouldn't think so. Young player, part of their core, pretty good player. So I don't think he's somebody that would be in that category. Evan Fournier is somebody, he's making $17 million next year exactly, but it's a player option. So he can opt out and test the market if he wants to. Maybe he becomes a guy if he opts in, which I would think he would probably opt out. But if he opts in, he would be somebody that, you know, maybe Orlando says, no, we want to go in a different direction as far as how our cap situation. Maybe you want any interest in Evan Fournier? I kind of like him.
Yeah, he's a decent player.
He's a ready-made.
He can defend. Yeah, he's a plug-and-play guy. When you put him through this filter, I think the exercise that you want to go on is, could he be the sixth most important piece on a championship-caliber team, right?
And I think, yeah.
I think that there could be something there.
Ricky Rubio is the next player on the list. Now, we're talking about needing a backup point guard.
You do.
Or backup kind of a combo guard like Sean Livingston wound up being.
Rubio doesn't shoot.
He has improved in that vein, but Rubio is somebody that gets easy baskets for other players and keeps it moving. So as
Rubio's
far as
intriguing.
Somebody that could soak up minutes, I know you wouldn't think of him as a prototypical Warrior, but he is an excellent passer and could keep it moving. And he would be signed next year and the following year. Eric Bledsoe, I don't think, is going anywhere from Milwaukee. Eric Gordon
yeah.
Yep, I got the same list in front of me. Eric Gordon, 31 years old, been through the playoff ringer. We've seen him have big games against the Warriors, can shoot the three a little bit. We know he likes to defend. I think Gordon would be a terrific fit.
Yeah, Eric Gordon, he is somebody, though, again, if you take Eric Gordon on, he's been banged up this year.
He's banged up every year.
He's got an extension, though, that you'd be getting Eric Gordon if you'd made that move, let's say July, I think, 5th. The Warriors have basically a day to execute this thing.
Yeah.
Or July 6th, once the league year officially opens. You're getting Eric Gordon for 4 years. So if you do the Eric Gordon as the trade exception and the Rockets were like, yeah, we want out on this guy, you're basically saying we're taking Eric Gordon for 4 years and a little under $80 million.
Yeah, that's a lot. You're right. 16, 18, 19, and 20.
It'd be like signing a free. So would the Warriors maybe balk at having to have Eric Gordon for 3 years beyond next year? Possible they wouldn't want to do that. You'd want somebody more maybe in the shorter term. But it gets back to the simple fact that when you're trying to figure out where this all pencils out, that you need to find a team that is willing to part with somebody.
Well, and I think if...
And that's the kind of contract a team would be willing to part with or want out of.
And think about this. If the Rockets, if it doesn't go their way in the playoffs this year, which I think we're all expecting it not to, D'Antoni could be gone, Daryl Morey could be gone, they could be looking to move off major pieces, and Gordon would be a reasonable candidate with that 4 years left on his deal for them to be willing to move off of. I think he's a strong candidate.
Yeah, Caris LeVert, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't think so either. I love Caris LeVert. Yeah. He's had some durability issues himself, but... He's a scorer. I think Caris LeVert would be really intriguing, but he ain't going anywhere.
You start talking about guys that the Nets are going to want around with Kyrie and Durant.
They extended him for a reason.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. James Johnson is interesting. I don't love James Johnson, the fit. He's also got a player option for about $16 million for next year. I think he would opt in on that. And I don't know. I mean, he's more of a four. And you got Eric Paschal. Like, he'd have to play the Eric Paschal position.
I'd be lying if I told you I had an in-depth scouting report on James Johnson.
Yeah, I'm out on that one. Bobby Portis, $15 million next year, but I believe that's a team option, so he would be gone. Dennis Schroeder.
Intriguing, good defender.
15.5. Dennis Schroeder, to me, would be a great fit. Would Oklahoma City look to just take him off the books? They could be a team that has...
Trying to spend some money.
You know, or maybe want to spend it elsewhere.
Right,
also see them wanting to maybe keep him around as part of a bigger trade package. As they've shown, they're not afraid to package players to try and get stars to come to Oklahoma City. It's the only way they can, unless they're going to draft them.
Right, and they have a ton of picks.
Right.
So they'll be looking, I think, to add bodies.
So they might be looking to add bodies, but I'm interested. Dennis Schroeder, actually, to me, would be a perfect fit.
I agree.
He would be a perfect fit as far as a third guard,
yep.
Backup. You could play a lot of minutes if you have an injury to Curry.
Comfortable
or Klay
with
Thompson.
Him with the ball in his hands for extended periods of time. Yeah.
To me, that's exactly if you're looking at that slot, and he makes $15.5 million. I'd put him as a candidate, but again, I don't know Oklahoma City's appetite for trying to deal him. Danny Green, I don't think is going anywhere.
No.
Cody Zeller, I wouldn't be wanting to spend $15 million on him even for 1 year to just be that extra big. I think you're going to go a cheaper route there. Kelly Oubre, final year of a extension or a quickie little, I think, two-year deal that he signed with Phoenix, or extension he signed with Phoenix. 14.3.
He's gotten better as a scorer every year.
And he would obviously project to be a bench player, but would also maybe project to be somebody that would be in a finishing lineup. If you get him with Curry and Clay,
how is
Wiggins.
He defensively? There hasn't been a whole lot of defense played down there in Phoenix.
Yeah, not great. Yeah. Not great. He's interesting. DeJounte Murray. Now, DeJounte Murray is somebody that I think good defender, combo guard-ish, young enough to where you maybe would be okay with having him for the next 4 years, but you would be having him for the next 4 years at about $62-63 million if you went and got him. He's making 14.2. Rudy Gay, 1 year left on his deal.
I like Rudy Gay, just a little long in the tooth. I thought Gay would be a nice fit this past year on that mid-level exception money, but it didn't end up happening.
2 years ago, I think that would have been decent. Will Barton, Thaddeus Young, Terrence Ross. I could see Terrence Ross being somebody that the Warriors or that the Magic, rather, would maybe want to get off of. He has 2 more years after next year, so 3 years left on his deal, making about $13.5 million. Don't think Marcus Smart would be going anywhere.
Nah.
Don't think the Warriors would want to spend $13 million on Dwayne Dedman, even for 1 year. And then you start getting into, you know, guys like Trevor Ariza and J.J. Redick and Corey Joseph and guys that might be fits but also not thick enough. So
what about Covington?
Yeah, Covington becomes somebody that I think the Rockets would want to keep around, but to your point, if they blow it up, I think you'd be more apt to get Gordon.
For sure. Yeah, fair enough. I think Covington's a nice player, though.
You also have to, you know, I think Covington is a nice player. I just, you know, some players wind up on teams where you go, well, that takes them out of the mix. You know, like in baseball, it would always be, and I know it's softened a little bit, but the last few years, if you were looking at players from a Giants point of view, you know, if the A's had a nice player that you thought, boy, this guy would be a fit for the Giants, you pretty much knew, well, he'd probably be going to the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks because of the pipeline in play, or the Rockies, in the pipeline in play as far as some of the analytic, you know, general managers, and they all view the same players on the same spreadsheet, so they're all just going to trade those players to each other. The Giants have actually joined that mix now,
right,
with Farhan Zaidi, but there's some players that are in a certain pipeline that you just aren't going to get, and I think Covington being a Rocket means you don't want to end up getting him.
One guy that's would be really intriguing, don't think it would happen because, again, I think they probably want to hold on to this guy and see what it looks like, Spencer Dinwiddie with the Nets. I mean, I think he's a guy that's gotten better every year. He's a combo guard. Dinwiddie, I think, would be a terrific fit for the Warriors.
Yeah, J.J. Redick, $13 million next year, came up on the text line.
He's a shooter.
Chilton Ottebody text line also brings up Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson, though, would be in the Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris type. Like,
yeah.
Josh Jackson's a project.
Yeah.
And like, Josh Jackson's not somebody you're going to get and say he's playing 7-8-man rotation minutes on a team that believes it can contend for a Western Conference championship.
What do you think of Dinwiddie?
I like Dinwiddie. Yeah, I like Dinwiddie. I don't view him as somebody, though, that is going to be available.
Yeah.
As I start
to, you might, you know, put a little package out together. You know, I hear you, and they want to see, the Nets want to see what it looks like with Kyrie and KD. Obviously, they want to run it back next year. And you're right, Dinwiddie probably wouldn't be available this summer, but I like Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting. And to me, more likely, again, that you're able to acquire players that have multiple years on their deal than just 1 year, because I would think teams would want to, you know, to free up future years down the line, if you're looking to essentially what you're looking for if you're the Warriors is a salary dump.
Right.
You're looking for a salary dump. Yeah. And you know, a team willing to dump, you know, Eric Gordon, 4 years left. DeJounte Murray, 4 years left, although he's a young player. Terrence Ross, 3 years left. Guys like that, I think, are the guys more apt to where other teams would have an appetite to come at you and say, hey, do you want to take this guy off our hands? I think it's going to be up to the Warriors to find the guys that have 1 or 2 years that would be perfect fits for the championship window without having to have them around on the back end.
Yeah, for sure.
Of what might be a bad deal.
Hey, I wanted to ask you something before we get to Wes Goldberg at the bottom of the hour. We just got the news this week, Clay's not playing this year.
Yeah, out for the year.
He wants to play in the Olympics. Now, when you talk about, well, what are they down to, like the final, what is it, 60 players, whatever that final pooling is, and they're going to pull 12 guys from that of the finalists, and they'll do that in a few weeks. I think if Clay's healthy, without question, he's one of the 12. I mean, he's got, I think, enough cachet, and there's not another guy like Clay Thompson. I mean, I was looking at the list yesterday. I mean, maybe a Bradley Beal, but there is no spot-up shooter that won't require the ball in his hands. Like,
yeah, he's a perfect fit
for a team like that, especially. But you have to ask yourself too, and he's earned the right to go play. So if Clay wants to play, he's playing. Bottom line, how good do you feel about that though? If you're Bob Myers,
I think you let him play. And I know Joe Lacob's been on record. Hey, if my guys want to play, go play. And I think, really, if you're the Warriors, you owe them the freedom to allow them to do whatever they want, given what they've brought to the table the last 7 years, and really the last 5 years even more on top of that.
Yeah.
I also think it's a good warm-up. And here's the other part of it, just the timeline. You know, Klay Thompson tears his ACL June 13th, and it's a 9 to 12 month recovery. He has surgery, I believe it was July 2nd. He had the ACL surgery to do the repair on the left knee. 9 months from then, as Steve Kerr so eloquently pointed out back in September, 9 months from then is April 1st, which pretty much means at a minimum he would come back with a week to go in the season. So he ain't coming back. Like Steve Kerr, like remember he blew everybody away with that? Because there was a I remember people saying
February after the All-Star break.
There were people saying December. Like, oh, he's a fast healer. He's a fast healer, December or January.
It's an ACL tear.
That was
tear.
Fans. Right. But that was never going to happen. I thought March or April was possible, but Steve Kerr really tamped that down right off the jump. 9 months from when he had the surgery is April 1st. We're talking about Olympic competition at the end of July and August. So
that's three more months.
He's going to be able to go a full year. So the high end on the recovery time plus a month before he's really playing, and it's not like he's going to be playing 40 minutes a game. Everybody can get light work in and have an impact, and you figure out who your finishing lineups are going to be in a game if it's close, and you roll the dice that way. So I actually think when you look at the context of the timeline, it's a perfect fit for him to ramp back up without having played this year toward some higher-level competition. I think it's the same thing with Steph. Steph's basically had his sabbatical year. It's not a leg injury. It's a hand injury. He's going to come back and play the final 15 or 20 games of this season. It's a night. I almost view it in a year where these guys got basically a full year of rest and are going to have an additional offseason on top of that. It's a nice warm-up act for what becomes almost a redemption season next year.
You just convinced me. Yeah, Clay's got to play in the Olympics. And he was going to anyway. But it's for the best.
And look, and you know what? If he gets hurt, people are going to say, what was he doing? But as Steve Kerr said, you know, this week, he was talking about Steph Curry. It's like, what are you doing if you're not going to play? Like, if you're healthy and you're not going to play, what are we doing?
That's illogical at that point.
Like, guys can get hurt any day, any game.
And so,
the beach, you know, DeMarcus Cousins ripped his ACL playing a pickup game.
Right. So, by that logic, anytime it becomes clear that a team isn't going to win, pack it in, you know? Like, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. The only caveat to that, this is a particularly unique set of circumstances in the sense that they're god-awful this year, and there's a myriad of reasons to believe that they're going to be very competitive next year. And you don't want to, in that, there's still a tenuous grip
Run. You don't want a Paul George to happen.
Well, yeah, and if you lose either one of these guys next year,
forget it.
It's over.
No championship.
It's done.
And the whole thing is probably over. It would be, you wouldn't be able to ever get back to that level again if you have another catastrophic injury to somebody.
Yeah, and you can't.
The dynasty would be over.
Right.
Like you can say, oh, gap year, and that's fine. You can do it. It's kind of like with the Giants. You left the even numbered year open until they didn't win in an even numbered year,
sure.
Right? In 16, like even in 16, people were like, oh, but it's an even numbered year.
Watch out, the Cubs better watch out.
And out of respect for what they had done, you give them that benefit. Like, the Warriors are going to get the respect going into next year. But if anything happens next year that is like a setback, that's a wrap.
Yeah.
How tenuous it is.
Yeah, of course. And
you know, any kind of season-ending injury where a guy's got to miss 9 to 12 months from any of the big three or even really four if you want to count Wiggins, and that dynasty over.
Yeah, it's a wrap at that point. And they would tell you that it's not because, well, what choice do you have? But I think we could all read the writing on the wall at that point. And I think that's why it's so important to have perspective on this. And also, JD, to have a little bit of respect and appreciation for what they accomplished. Like, and I'll put it to you like this. It would be nice to think that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are going to be back at the NBA mountaintop again, right? And maybe they'll play in another NBA Finals. Even if this team could get back to the NBA Finals, this core group, you know, it's called, you know, the Big Three, whatever. If that Big Three could even at some point in the rest of their careers, however long these three guys play basketball together, even if they could make it back to one more NBA Finals, I would consider that a win for this team. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
And they retire tomorrow. They're all legends. Like, their legacy's set. They're playing with a big-ass handful of house money at this point, and anything you get going forward is a complete bonus. Now, Joe Lacob will tell you, well, I didn't build the Chase Center to, you know, pay homage to what the Warriors did over at Oracle, right? I get that. Like, the goal is going to be to continue to win. But it, really, at this point, anything they give you on the back end of their careers is a bonus. Now, when you're paying Steph Curry $40 million a year, you hope for a little better ROI than that. But perspective is all I'm saying.
John Dickinson, Ryan Covey, Wes Goldberg will join us next. It's Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors This Week continues on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Ryan Covey.
Yes, sir.
More phone calls coming up here as we are with you until noon. Let's get to our final guest on the program today. It is Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News, Wes Goldberg. He joins us on 95.7 The Game. Wes, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, same over here. Thanks for having me on.
What have you made of Andrew Wiggins through four games? I know you did a breakdown about his defense. He's seemingly been more active. And I'll tell you, the biggest takeaway for me just in the four games is the way that he's played. It really lends itself toward the belief that it will fit under the context of when the Warriors are healthy and more talented in terms of the overall roster next year.
Yeah, I think offensively it's been pretty seamless. I mean, they're asking him to do simple things: run the floor, hit open threes, get to the rim, do all these things. They're not asking him to do what the Timberwolves were asking him to do, which was, hey, be our offense, please, and get the ball to Karl Anthony Towns a little bit more. So I think that has just been a more natural fit for him. And defensively, I think that's where I think everybody's been a little bit more pleasantly surprised, maybe more so than even the coaches had anticipated seeing from him. I mean, they've not only been able to slot him up against, you know, guys like LeBron James and Devin Booker and James Harden and all these guys, but he's done a pretty good job against them too. I mean, I think when he was guarding Harden and Westbrook the other night against the Rockets, they were a combined 1-for-5 from the field against Wiggins, you know? So when you have that kind of player with that sort of athleticism, lateral quickness, and wingspan that Wiggins has, he's pretty versatile, and you can basically slot him against any perimeter player. And you project forward with his pairing with Klay Thompson, and now you've got two switchable, versatile perimeter defenders. Where in a league that you're seeing, you know, the Lakers have two superstars, the Clippers have two superstars, you have the Rockets with Harden and Westbrook. I mean, everybody's kind of going to this two scorer, two superstar sort of format. If you have Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins guarding at a high level, that's going to put the Warriors at a pretty good advantage defensively.
Yeah, and I think the thing, Wes, that's kind of stood out to me about Wiggins, with that wingspan, as you mentioned, his ability to block shots and alter shots. I've been pretty impressed by that so far. Draymond Green, never one to mince words. I think when he spoke out about Wiggins' defensive acumen, it was maybe a little bit of a shot at D'Angelo Russell, but also, hey, wanting to make sure that Wiggins knows what the standard is, but also maybe trying to pump him up a little bit. But all NBA defensive? I don't know, man. Were you feeling that comment?
Look, I think that Draymond Green is going to pump up his dude, and that's basically what he's doing there. But I'll also say this. That is not out of the question. Not maybe, like, all NBA defensive team is something that this Warriors coaching staff has been telling Andrew Wiggins as a possible goal, right? Andrew Wiggins wants to be an all-star. He's never been an all-star. So first and foremost, that's what he wants to do. To get to that level, I think he is understanding, all right, I need to start shedding this reputation of me being one of the worst defenders in the league. And by the way, he fairly earned that reputation.
Yes, he did.
He was a lazy defender in Minnesota. I don't think there's any question about that. But playing a simpler role on offense, you know, he's able to maintain that battery life, so to speak, for defense. And I think we're seeing that now. And if he's able to do that with a fresh start in Golden State, people will start looking at him differently. Maybe he can become an all-star one day if he's putting up 20 points, if the Warriors are winning 50-plus games and they start getting those, you know, winning team all-star type of selections. And then if that's the case, maybe Andrew Wiggins can be. I mean, look, he's got all the tools. 7-foot wingspan. He's insanely athletic. He made a play against James Harden, and it was in that defensive breakdown that you mentioned earlier, where he got killed on a screen by P.J. Tucker. He's about 9 feet away from James Harden as Harden's about to gather for his, you know, patented step-back three-pointer, and just sort of reappears somehow in front of James Harden with a hand in his face, contests the shot. James Harden misses it. That's a type of play that very, very few players in the league can make. And when I talk about very few players, I'm talking about the likes of like Kawhi Leonard and stuff. Now, I'm not gonna, you know, try to out hyperbole Draymond Green right now, but I do think that like there's very few players in the league that can make that. And if you could start doing that a little bit more consistently and start kind of hitting and getting those highlight films going, who knows? Maybe he will completely reverse that reputation that he's got in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I mean the big part of it, and you touched on it. I mean, the body type is there. Right? Like the physical tools are there. It's just a matter of getting them in the right spots and like you said, keeping them motivated.
Yeah. And look, I think part of what was hurting him with the Timberwolves was the fact that they sucked a lot and that was kind of a bummer. And like, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, like when you are just always bad, and this is a guy who had been on winning teams all throughout his, you know, young life and career, you know, all the way up through Kansas. And then gets to Minnesota, and it's just rebuild after rebuild. Four coaches in 6 years, all of these things, and they're just always bad. And they're bad, but also like without direction. Like the Warriors are bad right now; they're literally the worst team in the league. But they have direction, and I think that's something that Andrew Wiggins was just missing. He's not your quote unquote. He's not a leader. I know he's the number one pick, and people expect that out of him, but he's not really that guy. He needs to be held accountable. He needs to have leadership in front of him. If he's your first or second best guy, you're asking for a little bit too much. But if he's your third or fourth guy, that's not bad with his you know, body type and what he's able to do off the ball as far as being a cutter and finishing at the rim and all these things. So I think that just like he's sort of like this boat that is going to rise with the tide, and I think that's going to be helpful for him and the Warriors.
Hey, Wes, I want to ask you about Kevon Looney. You know, clearly a guy that's carved out a niche for himself, earned himself that contract, was, I think, a huge contributor in a couple of those playoff series, particularly against the Rockets. It's been a tough go this year for Kevon Looney. What's the likelihood that we see him get back to a semblance of 100% health in the future? Is there reason to believe that this dude is ever going to be healthy again?
Man, I wish I had a good answer for you on this question. It's something I've been wondering. There was a period during the regular season where I wasn't sure he was going to play again at all, and he has gotten onto the court. They took their time this last time with him, and this neuropathic condition is very complicated. I don't think anybody really has a handle on it outside of just the specialists and doctors that he works with. And this is a guy whose body has not only before this season has routinely sort of let him down and broken down. And so, yeah, I know he's young, but he kind of feels like he's got the body of a 37-year-old out there. Right?
Yeah, he's an old young.
Yeah, and it's just I don't know that he'll ever be what they hoped that he would be when they signed him to a 3-year, $15 million contract. When they had hoped that, hey, you're going to be our starting center. You're going to be this like super switchable, rebounding kind of five for us. I don't think he's ever going to get to that point. I think they're realizing that, and he might be just a 15 to 20-minute per game type of player going forward, which, okay, $5 million a year, 2 more years left on this contract, not bad. But I don't think he's ever going to get to that point that, like, this. They used to use the word, like, building block, you know, in regards to him. And I just don't think that he is ever going to get to that point.
And how much is that going to impact Wes? And we're talking with Wes Goldberg here, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. How much is that going to impact roster composition for next year? Because, you know, you've got Looney and Chris as incumbent bigs, and then you've got Smiley Geach as a potential project. If you can't count on Looney, you're going to have to add at least one more big to that mix. I think the Warriors are going to do that anyway, but you may be in a spot where you almost have to add two.
Yeah, I think that this team is going to look at everything. They're going to look at Looney very carefully, but I'll tell you, Marquise Chris's emergence has been a really important development this season. Had Marquise Chris not sort of emerged as your starting center, this is a guy they signed to a training camp deal. This is a guy they're like, let's just see what he's got. And they ended up signing him to 4 different contracts in one season just to keep him. And if not for that, then they would be in a real bind going forward at that center position. It might be a situation where they roll the dice on a James Wiseman or something like that at the top of the draft, or they're going after some of these other names that could be free agents and maybe wanting to spend their $17 million trade exception or the full mid-level exception or something like that. But with Marquise Chris now, they believe that he could be a starter going forward. And he's shown, by the way, while he's been starting, that he can be. Like, he's a legitimate starting center right now for the Warriors. And I think he fits well with what they want to do in that starting lineup as far as being able to get the ball to Clay and Steph. And you could get, I don't know, 25, 28 minutes a night out of him, 12 to 15 minutes a night out of Kevon. And maybe I don't think that they view Alan Smaylagic as a meaningful rotation player next year. I think he's still a couple years away. If you add one traditional big this summer, which is their plan, I think you can get away with that. And by the way, they're going to want to get back to playing small with Draymond Green at center too. So you could pencil in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes a night of that maybe. So with all of that said, I think you could probably get away with adding one real center. Maybe you bring some guys into your G League program that you can use in break a case of emergency type situation, or maybe you add a two-way guy at the center spot. But I do think you can probably get away with one just sort of Zaza Pachulia type center who can absorb maybe like 8 to 10 minutes a night. You should be okay with that.
How much has the last couple of weeks of Jordan Poole changed the way that he's perceived around this team right now and maybe the way that they're looking at him going forward?
I think that this sort of development started right around December. He did go to the G League for a little bit of a stint. But, you know, obviously he was the league's worst shooter at the start of the season.
That's not good.
A lot of Warriors fans were sort of disillusioned with him. And look, the Warriors basically demoted him by sending him to the G League, but they were impressed by his ability to impact the game in other ways. He moves the ball well. He's gotten so much better defensively, where he just was not able to stop anything and know where anybody was going on that end of the floor, to being in the right place at the right time more often than not now. And that's been a tremendous development. I mean, if you could give a most improved player award for every team, he would get the Warriors most improved player award this season, probably even over Marquise Chris, considering how bad he was at the start. But they were really surprised, I think, when he went to the G League and they put the ball in his hands, basically just to say, hey, shoot yourself out of this slump. And instead of shooting himself out of the slump, he started making plays and started running point in Santa Cruz. And I talked with several coaches down there who were just impressed. They're like, we didn't expect him to do that. We didn't expect him to anticipate, you know, the weak side help coming over and him kicking out to the shooter in the corner. We didn't anticipate this level of basketball feel and playmaking. And he just has it, man. Like, he played point guard all through, you know, his early life until college. John Beilein moved him off the ball at Michigan. He became sort of this off-the-ball catch-and-shoot guy, which is what the Warriors thought that they were getting with him. And he just shows up. He's like, no, this is kind of what I want to do. I want to make plays. I want to do this. And he just started doing it because in the Warriors' offense, there's room to do that, right? So I think that they've been impressed by that. And even when he's not shooting the ball now, even when he's not shooting the ball well now, he's still making the right reads. He's making the right passes. He's playing well enough defensively. And there's been times now where Steve Kerr will leave him in at the end of the game in winnable games because he's been one of the best five players for them in most of these games.
Wes, as you look at next year, there's a clearer picture, I think, now after the Wiggins trade as to what the Warriors have, who the projects are, who the potential rotation, you know, players are, who the core is with Wiggins joining, obviously the other three. But as you have a firmer picture, a clearer picture of that, what's the biggest need right now on this team as it stands today?
I think more of this Andrew Wiggins type of length this team has been missing. And it starts with your superstars, right? When you look at Steph Curry and you look at Klay Thompson, obviously you're getting the shooting there, and Draymond Green, you're getting like the basketball IQ there. But what you're really not getting is elite-level athleticism. Or a really elite length. Klay Thompson's a elite length type of small shooting guard, but that's why they were so dead set on getting him back to the two as opposed to playing him at the three, which is where they would have needed to play him had D'Angelo Russell still been on the team, right? So they look at what their superstars provide, and they want these other players who fill out the rest of the roster to sort of complement those guys. And when you get a guy like Andrew Wiggins who can jump through the ceiling and be this elite-level athlete and provide the 7-foot wingspan and length, then I think you want to take that and just sort of double down. That's what made this team so dangerous in years past, was not only did you have Kevin Durant, but you also had Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala and all these guys, and you look at the guys that they've been drafting, and they're trying to find guys like that at the bottom of the first round. So now when you're looking at the top of the draft, I still expect them to look for that sort of just body type, that length, that athleticism. And they're going to have also, you know, a mid-level exception and a trade exception. I still anticipate them trying to find guys like that who can also sort of exist within the ecosystem that they already have, which is, you know, high basketball feel, coachable type of guys who can thrive in an up-tempo offense and switch multiple positions, guard multiple positions on defense.
Wes Goldberg, our guest here on 95.7 The Game, what should we expect from Dragan Bender?
that's a great question. Maybe he gets a few minutes. Maybe he hits a couple of three-pointers. They look at him as this project. Hey, let's get him in the building for 10 days and see if he can hit some shots for us. They liked what they had in Omari Spellman. They didn't want to trade Omari Spellman. They had to trade him to get under this luxury tax apron. And they did like that sort of element from that big man spot that he provided, this guy who could space the floor from that position. Without that, they don't have that. Without Spellman, they don't have that anymore. So you bring in a guy like Bender who has a reputation as a floor spacing big. He hasn't actually executed that at any real point at the NBA level. But you see if you could find something there, and if not, then you let him go. But really, these 10-day contracts, it's just going to be a parade of these guys throughout the course of the rest of the season. And it's just a way for them to get a firsthand look at some guys who may end up being guy number 14, guy number 15 on the roster next year. Maybe your two-way guys next year, maybe somebody you want to bring into your G League program next year. But that's really what they're looking at, with these two 10-day roster spots that they have open for the rest of the season.
Hey, I want to ask you quickly, Wes, about Eric Paschal. You know, came in, played great, kind of hit the rookie wall. I think he's kind of found his game again a little more lately. Do you get that sense around the team that they feel like he's rebounded after what was kind of a tough stretch?
Yeah, and look, I think that he was injured. He had two thigh contusions, one to each thigh. You mentioned the rookie wall. That's a real thing. I mean, he was just worn down. And you sort of bounced back from that. He got healthy. I think they downplayed how injured and beat up he really was, because you also look at the style of play he has. Isolation heavy, just pounding into the paint, you know, shouldering his way to the rim. You know, that wears on a guy, right?
Sure.
So I do think that he was dealing with some of that. Now he's been able to, you know, freshen up a little bit and bounce back. And going forward, you know, I think what they're asking him to do is play a little bit less of that isolation ball and start playing within the flow of the offense a little bit more. And I think that's going to be a key development for him over these next 26 games is, improving this, assist to turnover ratio, which is quietly pretty bad.
Five turnovers the other night. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't have great court vision, tends to just sort of, you know, he's a little bit, I don't want to go as far as ball hog, but he's a little bit of a black ball on offense. And that's cool when you're the worst team in the league and you're just trying to find offense anywhere.
Yeah.
But next year, you know, when Steph and Clay are back, like, you can't be dribbling the ball four or five times and isolating and getting the ball knocked away from you. Like, that's just not going to work. So you need to figure out, okay, the Warriors need to figure out, he needs to figure out, are you this, you know, ninth guy on the team who we're just going to throw in when we need some points and Steph and Clay need to rest? Or are you a guy who can coexist with them and be a six-man type who can slot in at the small forward or power forward position and just, you know, exist within the ecosystem of the team?
Love it.
Yeah, great stuff, Wes. I think that's a great point because, you view him on the surface like a player that should be able to fit with everybody else, but he really hasn't functioned in a manner that leads you to where you can project it out, a lot like Wiggins kind of has in the short time that we've seen him to this point.
Right. And look, defensively, he fits right in, right?
Sure.
But offensively, there's a little bit, like, even Steve Kerr has been, okay, is he a three or is he a four? So he played him at the four at first. Then he moved him over to small forward, and some of this was because of injuries. But I think Steve Kerr views him more as Draymond Green's backup at the four spot. But then where are you getting, like, are you able to play Eric Paschal with Draymond Green in the front court in like a death lineup type of lineup? I think you're giving up a little bit too much size there. What do they think of Andrew Wiggins? Do they think he could play the four in small ball lineups? Okay, if that's the case, then what do you do with Paschal? I do think that there is going to be a need to figure out how he works with, and that's why getting Steph back is going to be so important, not just for, you know, the high-level guys like Andrew Wiggins, but all these other guys learning how to play off of Steph Curry. As we know, Steph is a very unique player. He's a game-changing player. He completely changes the geometry of the court in a way that these guys have never played with. And a guy like Eric Paschal's never played with a guy like Curry. So they'll need to learn how to do that. And by the way, I mean, even if he is just your ninth guy on the roster who is, you know, like, let's throw him in there to get 8 to 12 points a night, that's still a really good value with the number 41 pick in the draft, right?
Here, here.
I do think that they want to know if he's got a higher ceiling.
Wes, great stuff. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure.
All right, Wes Goldberg joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Good stuff there.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, and I think that's a great way to describe Pascal. And, I mean, that's the thing. Like, to be the, you know, combo forward, like, you know, if you can play the three or the four and be that backup to Wiggins or Draymond, I think that's a massive role to play. And we talked about it. They're gonna need to bring in some reinforcements there anyway. But you're right. I mean, you know, to play that style of basketball when you're not a good team and you're just desperate for offense and you're basically just eating up 48 minutes a night and that's the goal, fair enough. You can stand there and dribble. But when you got the flow of your team back with Clay and Steph, that ball needs to be moving, man. And he doesn't actually have an assist-to-turnover ratio. He has a turnover-to-assist ratio. Not good.
I think he's got to be the four. I don't think you can even I wouldn't even factor him in as a three. I would just say he's Draymond's backup. And one of the things that I really – I know you don't want to get a look at it now if you're Steve Kerr because you don't really want to play Draymond at the five in a meaningless
year,
season.
Yeah, put all that wear and tear on him.
But to me, it's can Pascal play with Draymond 4-5?
Right.
Can they play small ball 4-5 and you have Wiggins and Steph and Clay out there? You know, that's something that I'd be intrigued about. The 3-4 with those two, I'm completely out on that.
Yeah.
I don't think it works. So to me, he is in some ways a Draymond Green insurance policy. You know, it's all right, if Draymond's gonna play 32 minutes, then he's gonna play the other 16 plus maybe some.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's just your baseline. And if Draymond's gotta miss games, which we all know Draymond's gonna get miss games, then he could step in at the four and do some of the things Draymond does and maybe give you a little bit more of an offensive push and play with Curry and Thompson and Wiggins.
And I think that's the key, and you're spot on there. And I think that's the key, too. If he's coming off the bench or, you know, part of that second unit, whatever you want to call it, they're going to need to get offense from that second unit next year. And Pascal has at least shown the ability in a half-court set where he can, you know, he can have the ball in his hands and create his own shot and get a little offense when they might need it. And maybe just throw a little different look at teams. I don't think there's anything wrong with being a predominantly ball movement team, but having a little bit of different look here and there. You know, you run a little pick and roll here, you run a little half court there. I mean, you know, I think it's good to have a little versatility within the flow of your offense, and having guys like Pascal, you know, provided it's not a detriment to what you want to do fundamentally, I think there's a place for that.
Yeah, Pascal's the backup four. And I think at that point, you look at Wiggins as your three now, and you start to pencil out, all right, well, what are the two spots that are open? As far as the main group that of three players that you're going to need to get, it's the backup three. So you need to you throw Pascal out as if you don't even have him as a three. Could maybe be an emergency three. So you need a backup three, and then you almost need a backup to the backup.
Right.
And like in a perfect world, you'd have and Glenn Robinson III probably played his way out of this. In a perfect world, you'd have a guy that you get, you know, among those players that we mentioned, that's your backup three, and then you have a guy like Glenn Robinson III as your backup to the backup.
Right. Yeah, that's Glenn Robinson III's best role.
And then you have your backup combo guard or point guard.
Right.
And then you have Damian Lee and Marquise Chris and Kevon Looney and whoever your other center in the mix is. And then you got a team that can win 50-plus games next year and maybe be as high as three in the Western Conference. It's all of those things that have to be in play. Sometimes I think there's this belief that, well, Warriors just, hey, Steph and Clay come back and Draymond and just roll the balls out and they're going to get, the moves to fill those next three roster spots are in a lot of ways going to determine how good this team can be next year.
Without question. And let's face it, Steph on the other side of 30 now. Clay just turned 30, if I'm not mistaken, as well, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Clay's 30 now, coming off of a serious injury.
Draymond will be 30 in March.
Right. So these guys are getting a little older. And while I applaud the organization for being able to bring in some young talent, and obviously with the high picks that they project to have the next 2 years, you can see a little bit more of that coming on the horizon. But, yeah, and also collectively, JD, I feel like the Western Conference is just better. And the Warriors 5 years ago into the finals and cutting through the West like a hot knife through butter, I think have distorted our perception of what the Western Conference actually is. And make no mistake about it, like The Lakers with LeBron still got a few years left and Anthony Davis, they're damn good. The Nuggets, that's been a team on the rise for a couple of years. I mean, we know what time it is with the Clippers. Hell, they gave the Warriors fits in a first-round series last year before they had two of the best players in the world on that team. So, and then not to mention the Jazz and, you know, even teams like the Mavericks and the Pelicans who have good young star players who, you know, one of which we'll see tomorrow night in Zion Williamson. The West is no joke, and it's only going to get better.
One player who's not 30 on the Warriors? Andrew Wiggins. He is going to be 25 tomorrow, though.
Wow.
Happy birthday in advance to Andrew Wiggins.
Absolutely. You excited to see Zion Williamson tomorrow?
Yeah. Big time. Missed him in December.
Right.
Going to be fun to see him out there on the floor. Three hours. Flew by. Great
that's
stuff.
That's how we do it, JD. Come on, baby.
In the books, thanks to Spadoni and Arden. For Ryan Covey, I'm John Dickinson. Keep it locked right here at 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.